I was thinking this morning when preparing for the class that this is an ideal activity on Ekadasi Day. Just become absorbed in the pastimes of the personality of Godhead. Just like on the appearance day of these forms of the Lord, Prabhupada's training is that we observe half-day fast on the appearance days of the Lord. And what do we do during that day? We sing and praise the glories of the personality of Godhead. So the instruction that we find in Nectar of Devotion is that on Ekadasi days, decrease on the one side, bodily activity, and increase on the other side, hearing and chanting. So it's very suitable, this chapter, directly just describing the pastimes of the Lord. Now, the pastimes of the Lord themselves are filled with transcendental potencies. And just by hearing them, or just by describing them, or just by coming in somehow in contact with them, then those transcendental potencies are acting. Whether we understand that they're acting or we don't understand that they're acting. At the same time, for our stage in practicing Krishna consciousness, the benefit is enhanced by understanding what Shukadeva Goswami gave previously, or Brahma gave to Narada previously, is an understanding that these are transcendental pastimes. This is the transcendental Lord who has created this cosmic manifestation. He populates by his potencies this cosmic manifestation. Then he enters within the cosmic manifestation to display wonderful pastimes to attract the minds and the hearts of those foolishly captured by illusion of cosmic manifestation to him, to the Lord. And there are specific, embedded within those pastimes are specific important messages that the Lord wants for us to receive, along with being attracted to him and his wonderful pastimes. So, this morning, we'll be discussing, or Lord Brahma speaks about the appearance of Lord Hayagriva. And with the appearance of Lord Hayagriva comes an important, besides the attractive pastime, an important message. The important message is that the Vedas are essential for the purpose of creation to be realized or achieved. People ask the question, why did God create this place that's filled with suffering? When God is all good and God is all powerful, so why did he make a place where people suffer? Common question. Especially people ask that when they're suffering. They don't ask that question when they think that they're enjoying. Why did God create this place where it's we're having so much fun? Why did he do that? They go the other side. And there's so much suffering. And the so-called happiness is also suffering. So-called because it's in forgetfulness of Krishna. That's so-called happiness. It's the carrot that makes the living entity, conditioned living entity, keep plodding on, trying to capture the carrot. You know the carrot example, yes? Donkey, stick, carrot. The carrot is always just same distance ahead. They never capture the carrot, but they think, I can capture the carrot. So chasing the carrot. The carrot is sense gratification. So the promise. Da-da-da-da, this material world can give you sense gratification. Yeah, ooh, yeah, let's go. Sense gratification. The carrot. And the stick. Pa! Ooh! The carrot and the stick. How to motivate donkeys is carrots and sticks. And the purpose of creation is twofold. When you're asked that question, here's a simple answer. The purpose of creation is twofold. Out of compassion, the Supreme Personality of Godhead provides the living entity that which the living entity that misuses his free will, that says to the Lord, I want to enjoy separate from you. And the answer is, you can't enjoy separate from me. It's not possible. I want to enjoy. Like a child throwing a tantrum. It's not possible. All right. Here's illusion. Because you can't enjoy separate from me. But here it is. You wanted it. A place where you can't enjoy separate from me, but it looks like you can enjoy separate from me. Yay! Sense gratification. And it's always elusive. Elusive like a mirage in the desert is elusive. You know what a mirage in the desert is. The sun shines on silicon, the sand, and it looks like water. We all know, by definition, a desert equals a place with no water. But you see the reflection of the sun on the sand, it looks like water. And it's always some number of steps ahead, because it's just the reflection of the sun on the sand. Looks like water. And so, the Vedic example is, I don't know of it happening exactly, but the deer chases the sand, the reflection of water, and he dies in the desert because there's no water in the desert. By definition, there's no water in deserts, and by definition, there's no happiness in the material world. There's the appearance of water in the desert by a mirage. And that's an illusion. It's not really water in the desert. Same. There's the appearance of happiness in this material world, and it's called sense gratification. But it's mirage. It's maya. It's maya, not this. But it appears to be. So that's one of the purposes of creation, to provide the mirage, to provide the illusion that one can enjoy, because the living entity threw his little tantrum. I want to enjoy. Okay. Here's an illusion. Try to enjoy. I'm telling you ahead of time, there's no enjoyment. That's okay. I'll roll the dice. I'll gamble. Maybe I'll enjoy. Okay. The second purpose of creation is built into the creation is the remedial measure. You learn your lesson. Oh, there's no enjoyment here. Now what's my option? And that's the purpose of the Vedas. The Vedas is to give to that thoughtful living entity who asks the question, Why is everybody suffering? Without exception, everyone wants to be happy. And everybody's suffering. No one wants to get diseased, and everybody gets diseased. No one wants to get old and infirm, and everybody gets old and infirm. Everybody has to die, and nobody wants to die. What's going on here? People don't ask that question, generally. But thoughtful people ask that question, like, who am I? Did it ever occur to you to ask, who are you? I'm Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. I'm a sense gratifier. I enjoy this, and that's who I am. This family, this is my job, these are my children or relatives, and that's who I am. What do you mean, who am I? So the persons who ask that question in a more deep way, the Vedas are there, so that the second purpose of, the real purpose of creation can be fulfilled. So the Lord, in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, says, at the beginning of creation, I send forth generations of men and demigods, and with them the process of sacrifice. And the process of sacrifice is described within the Vedas. Everybody's sacrificing. The non-scriptural follower is also sacrificing. But Vedic sacrifice is Yajna Vai Vishnu. So how that sacrifice is to be done in such a way that the real purpose of creation is achieved, that is, learning, restoring this, you know, better option, the in relation to Krishna option, not apart from Krishna option, not illusion, letting go of illusion and taking shelter of reality. That's the purpose of the Vedas. So we heard earlier in this chapter about the four Kumaras. Now there's different appearances of the four Kumaras, but the reference that's made here is during the end of the previous millennium, the Vedas disappeared. And so Brahma, when he got up in the morning and ready to do his sadhana, he didn't see the Vedas. Oh yeah, last night the Vedas disappeared. So he prayed to the Lord during his sadhana, please manifest the Vedas. So he manifested the Vedas through the Kumaras. And the Kumaras presented it so nicely that the sages could readily understand it. Now the purpose of creation is, the second purpose of creation is in place. So, with the Hayagriva incarnation, same purpose, different Leela, same purpose. So, the Lord performs various Leelas to attract the hearts and minds of living entities, and they're wonderful Leelas. And they're embedded with spiritual potencies, just hearing the Leelas. It's uplifting, purifying. Even you don't understand it, just hear it. Spiritual potency is there. Then those that are more thoughtful can pick up on this thread. Oh, there's a message here. The message is the Vedas are really important, and the Lord wants to see that the Vedas are held intact. Okay, all that's background to read this morning's verse. Text number 11. The Lord appeared as the Hayagriva incarnation in a sacrifice performed by me. It's Lord Brahma speaking, so by Lord Brahma. He is the personified sacrifices. And the hue of his body is golden. He is the personified Vedas as well, and the super soul of all the demigods. When he breathed, all the sweet sounds of the Vedic hymns came out of his nostrils. Can anybody do that? Generally, it's not how it comes out. But Hayagriva, just by his breathing, the sweet sounds of the Vedas became manifested. So this is, I'm going to describe three other forms of Hayagriva that the Srimad Bhagavatam discusses. But here in chapter 7 of Canto 2, Brahma is performing a Vedic sacrifice. Now, Vedic sacrifice, precisely done according to the Vedas, generally is a Karmakanda ritual. 90-something% of the Vedic presentation has to do with Karmakanda. Karmakanda means rituals for the purpose of material elevation and getting that carrot. But doing it religiously. So, in the process of Vedic sacrifice, the first thing that happens is the bhokta of the yajna is named. That's the personality of Godhead. His name is invoked. Sometimes it's directly the same, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and then the rest is this deva, that deva, Ganapati, please remove the obstacles, here's what I want, Om Jaya Jagadisha Hare. So while invoking the demigods, the personified sacrifices appeared, who is also the personified Veda. So Prabhupada makes this very, I read it 5 times. It's very, 2 sentences, very simple, but strong logic. Purport. The Vedic hymns are generally meant for sacrifices performed by fruitive workers who also want to satisfy the demigods to achieve their fruitive result. But the Lord is the personified sacrifices and personified Vedic hymns. Therefore, one who directly is a devotee of the Lord is a person who automatically both serve the purposes of sacrifice and please the demigods. The devotees of the Lord may not perform any sacrifice or may not please the demigods as per Vedic injunctions, and still the devotees enter a higher level than the fruitive workers or the worshippers of different demigods. End of purport. So there's a certain logic here. And it's a logic that we should carefully consider, hopefully clearly understand. The Vedas, and the Vedic sacrifices, are propitiating, that is, making offerings unto, trying to satisfy the devas. Generally, that's the mentality. However, I mentioned it before, the real beneficiary of the sacrifice is the personality of Godhead. He's Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam. He's the Bhokta of all yajnas. So other persons may be named, but he's the real Bhokta. Bhokta means the enjoyer. It looks like the devas are the enjoyers, but he's the real enjoyer because he's the real supplier of, he receives and he gives. So what if one just directly goes to the personality of Godhead and renders devotional service? That person need no longer perform the Vedic rituals. Not only they need not perform, because the Lord is personified sacrifice and personified Vedic hymns, they're on a higher platform. It's already achieved, and it's more. Because the more is, they're not at all confused. The devotees of the Lord are not at all confused what the function of the devas are and my relationship with those devas. We respect the devas and we worship Krishna. That's the higher platform. Just like at the end of chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita in purport, Prabhupada explains this word bhaj as the root word of bhakti. And the meaning of bhaj is practical activity. Practical activity means senses, sense objects, senses contact sense objects and do something. It's not just reflecting within, there's practical activity. And the consciousness behind the practical activity is serving the Lord. Then Prabhupada explains, this is exclusive for the personality of Godhead. It is inappropriate to use the word bhaj or bhakti in relation to a demigod. It's not appropriate. Another word should be used because this is exclusive. Like sarvadharmam parityajam, mam ekam sharanam. As sharanam is exclusive to the Supreme Lord, bhaj is exclusive to the Supreme Lord, we respect other living entities. We respect the demigods. But we worship Krishna through our service. Our service is an expression of that surrender to Him, acceptance of Him, taking shelter of Him, trying to please Him. So a devotee that is doing that has achieved the benefit of any Vedic sacrifice and more, because that's the fruit of the Vedic sacrifice, is to connect with Krishna. The second purpose of creation is to reestablish our relationship with the personality of Godhead. It's an indirect method. But its purpose, once achieved, is that connection with the Lord. And so, Brahma, when performing Vedic sacrifice, in such elevated consciousness, acknowledging the bhokta of the sacrifice, the Lord appeared. And as He appeared, just by His breathing, horses don't normally make such thing. We don't, and horses even less. They make other sounds when they breathe. His breathing was the Vedas, the sweet sounds of the Vedas. So that's one of the forms of Hayagriva. There's others that are mentioned, and the way that it works is there are different days of Brahma. And during different days of Brahma, Hayagriva appears in different ways. So, mentioned elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, where there's lists of incarnations, it describes that at the end of each kalpa, when the demon Ajnana, who is personified ignorance, imagine what that must look like. Personified ignorance. He steals the Vedas. At the end, so at the end of Brahma's day, he steals the Vedas and takes the Vedas down to Patala Loka. Hayagriva appears. He pursues Ajnana, finishes him, takes the Vedas, and gives them back to Brahma. That's another appearance of Hayagriva. Then another one, more common that we hear about, is the Madhu and Kaitava demons. So he's, another name is Madhusudana, he who kills the Madhu demon. But Madhu and Kaitava, rubbing their hands together, let's get the Vedas. So as Brahma was manifesting the Vedas in the beginning of the day, because Vedas need to be manifest. He was manifesting the Vedas. They stole the Vedas, and they went to the Patala kingdom. Hayagriva appeared, did battle, killed Madhu and Kaitava, and returned the Vedas to Brahma, preserving the Vedas, which is essential for the second purpose of creation. Then there's another version. And this other version is where Hayagriva is a demon. Not an incarnation of the Lord, but his name is Hayagriva. Brahma was asleep. So this is after the end of the Kalpa, during the night of Brahma. As he was sleeping, the Vedas were being manifest from his mouth, and Hayagriva came and stole the Vedas. Then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. It doesn't say by name which form of the Lord. And he killed the demon Hayagriva. And when Brahma awoke, the Supreme Personality of Godhead gave the Vedas again to Brahma. So, different Acharyas explain in general when there are variations of the descriptions of the personality of Godhead. This is because they take place during different cycles of the yugas or different days of Brahma. And the way that Prabhupada described it is just like there's this theme, because the personality of Godhead likes to enjoy, and variety is the mother of enjoyment, sometimes like this, sometimes like that, sometimes a little different. He's not bound, he can do whatever he likes. But there's a theme, and the theme prevails, and there's variety in the lila. I'm going to have to do something I normally don't do, but I want to go use the restroom. I'm going to put the button on. Text number 12 reads, at the end of the millennium, the would-be Vaivasvatamanu of the name Satyavrata would see the Lord in the fish incarnation. Would see that the Lord in the fish incarnation is the shelter of all kinds of living entities up to those in the earthly planets. Brahma says, because of my fear of the vast water at the end of the millennium, the Vedas come out of my, Brahma's, mouth, and the Lord enjoys those vast waters and protects the Vedas. Purport. During one day of Brahma, there are 14 Manus, and at the end of each Manu, there is a devastation up to the earthly planets. And the vast water is fearful even to Brahma. So, in the beginning of the would-be Vaivasvata Manu, such devastation would be seen by him. There would be many other incidents also, such as the killing of the famous Shankasura. This foretelling is by the past experience of Brahmaji, who knew that in that fearful, devastating scene, the Vedas would come out of his mouth, but the Lord in his fish incarnation not only would save all living entities, namely the demigods, animals, men, and great sages, but would also save the Vedas. So, there are, often it's said there's two devastations. There's two partial devastations and one complete devastation. The partial devastation comes at the end of each manu. At the end of each manu, the waters in the Garbhadak ocean we described, yes? The bowl of the universe is where the upper sphere is where the planets are, the lower portion is where the Garbhadak ocean is, and when the Hiranyaksha disturbs the arrangement of that which allows the earth planet to stay in its weightless or position within the universe, it plummets down into the Garbhadak ocean and Varaha rescues the earth. So the water of devastation rises at the end of each manu. There's 14 manus during each day of Brahma. There's one partial devastation. At the end of the day of Brahma, that partial devastation goes in another direction. It's described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that there's a long period of drought at the end of each day of Brahma. And then fire. And then the fire goes up. And when things are very dry and there's fire, they just turn into ashes. So the whole universe becomes hot. So it's described in Brihat Bhagavatamrita that the residents of Bhuvar and Svargalokas, even up to Maharloka and Janaloka, it gets too hot. It's dissolved up to Svargaloka, but it gets so hot up above, they have to leave and take shelter in Tapaloka. Then after the fire is over, they can go back to their residences. And that's what happens at the night of Brahma. But then, you know, those ashes enter into water and they dissolve. It's like, you know, a tablet. Some, you know, Alka-Seltzer or some kind of tablet that you're supposed to take, dissolve in water, and then you drink it. It's like ashes falling into the water. It just dissolves. What was the planets, you know, what we think is, hey, this is permanent. It's a tablet dissolved in water. And so, at the beginning of Brahma's day, he looks around, oh, I got to go to the office and recreate these lower... He has his job to do. So he restructures those lower planets at the end of each day, in the beginning and the morning, and establishes the process of sacrifice through the Vedas. And then at the end of the life of Brahma, there's a total annihilation. So two partial, one total annihilation. And they, you know, the sequencing of them is slightly different. So Brahma is speaking about the partial devastation that took place during the reign of King Satyavrata, who, after the sixth manu, he would become the seventh manu. Satyavrata is called the would-be Vaivasvata manu. That's because later on he's going to become... He was speaking about an event that took place and predicting what's going to take place after that event. Because Brahma's been around for a while. Things are cyclical, and he knows how it happens. So Satyavrata becomes Vaivasvata Manu. He takes on that service. The six specifically, and of course, there's variations according to different days of Brahma, it happens in not always identical fashion. The Lord is not obliged. But this is describing this particular one. There's the devastation, and so that the Lord wants to save the species, and the Lord wants to save the Vedas. So he has Satyavrata to make a giant boat and puts the living entities on the giant boat and the Vedas also, and he pulls the boat with a big rope, and it's put on one part of his body, and he flies through the water, and at the end of that period of time, partial devastation goes down, the living entities are there, and the Vedas are there, and everything's nice. And he just had a wonderful Leela with his devotee king. So we're going to call upon Satyavrata Das to describe a little bit more about Matsya Avatar and King Satyavrata. Do we have the little microphone? Give him the microphone. This is your chance to glorify your namesake. Something. Yes. You're doing great. Keep going. Okay. Well, what happened after that? Simple. The time for devastation came, and Matsya instructed Satyavrata to construct this boat and what to do, and so he did. And the Vedas, they went for a big ride. He protected the Vedas. It would, like Hayagriva, the Leela is very attractive. And there's slight variations of a Leela, but the theme is protection of the Vedas. It's reciprocation of loving exchanges with his devotee. There's protection of the Vedas in Matsya's case. And specifically also protection of the various species in this giant boat. Think how big a boat would have to be to take two members from each of the species of life. big boat. And to pull that big boat, you need a big fish. But he's capable. And he assumed that big form. And from the fin or the horn on top of the body of Matsya, the rope was fastened. And to the big waves, they were protected by Matsya. Well, it's a lila for protecting the Vedas. So again, the point here is that we also have an opportunity to take part in lila of the Lord by the process of Sankirtan Yajna, by these two things, the chanting of the holy name and the distribution of transcendental knowledge. You know, we don't have Matsya with a big boat and all the living entities in the Vedas. That's not the lila. Or Hayagriva, that's not the current lila. The current lila is Lord Chaitanya and his Sankirtan mission, and first, to prepare people to be able to understand, or to say side by side, to prepare people to understand the Vedas, this process of chanting. And side by side with that is making the knowledge of the Vedas available to people in general. And that's so that the purpose of creation can be experienced by people in general. It's compassion on the part of the Lord, and we just get to take part in that act of compassion of the Lord. And awakening divine consciousness through the chanting of the holy name. So I understand that you have this program every Sunday that you go out and you distribute books. This is such a core part of the mission that Prabhupada gave us, the distribution of literatures. I'm going to speak a little bit about book distribution ki jai, because this is the lila. From the time of Lord Chaitanya, he spoke transcendental knowledge. He entrusted his most intimate disciples, the six Goswamis, to compile that literature, those teachings that he gave them, to write books about them. Rather than writing the books himself, he instructed them to write and empower them to write those literatures. And then the very next generation, Jiva Goswami trained up these three super Vaishnavas, great, great, great acharyas, Srinivasa Acharya, Narottam Das Thakur, and Shyamananda Goswami, and sent them on book distribution. Bullock cart loaded with handwritten copies of the Goswami literature, go distribute this knowledge in its written form. That's our line. And they in turn distributed that knowledge, who their followers distributed that knowledge, and there's the histories of the great Vaishnavas who became great Vaishnavas because they received that knowledge is abundant. And then we don't hear so much about the distribution of that knowledge till again Bhaktivinoda Thakur revived through the use of printing press, the printing and distribution of the writings of the Goswamis and previous acharyas and his own writings, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, same, so many printing presses all over India and in so many languages and newspapers and books and massive publication work. And Srila Prabhupada made such emphasis on the distribution of transcendental knowledge, on the strength, I was thinking about this morning, that Prabhupada, I was listening to a lecture where Prabhupada was describing so many churches are now empty. He was saying, "In I've seen in London, big churches, now empty." What he means by empty is, he was saying, on Sunday, a few security people and maintenance people, they come and they open the locked doors, and a few old ladies and old men go in to worship. And then it's locked the rest of the week. Empty. And so he was saying, many of our places are places that formerly were churches. And it's true. Many of them. Anyway. So, the place of worship is where there's the hearing and chanting of the scripture and the worship of the deity form of the Lord. These two go very nicely together with chanting of the holy name. These five most potent things, we just named three of them. According to Nectar Devotion, five most potent things for advancing in spiritual life: hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting the holy name, worshipping the deity form of the Lord, and serving the devotees. That just leaves residing in a sacred place. Five most potent activities we can do right here. And so to give, this is compassion. Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gora Tvishe Namaha. The personality of Godhead, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who we are currently serving, manifested the greatest form of munificence by his Sankirtan. If we take part in it, here's the message. We can take part in it directly. We can take part in Lord Chaitanya's Leela just by taking up these activities, the Sankirtan, you know, the Srivasanga Kirtans, here we are. Then taking that same chanting and the message to others. This is the Sankirtan, the act of compassion. Giving the real purpose, the second real purpose of creation, to the lives of people in general. And it's very nice. It's transcendentally nice. And even we may not be feeling so much compassion, if we take up the activity, it helps us understand, because our community here is nice, and you go outside and see how people are living. Since being here, I heard several devotees describing what it was like recently going and spending time with relatives that they hadn't had intimate association with in some time, and it's that's night, and this is a whole other life, the life of, it's real life, and the other is like death. So when going out to give Krishna consciousness to others makes one appreciate more what one has. Whatever shortcomings different members of the community may have, or we ourselves may have, we have a great treasure, and we can more deeply appreciate what we have. And at the same time, and give that same opportunity, at least introduce the opportunity to others in the form of these Vedic literatures. So it's not Hayagriva, and it's not the Four Kumaras, and it's not Matsya Avatar, but it's the same principle appropriate for this age. We're living in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by taking part in the Lord's Sankirtan. So, it's not that this is not an exaggeration. That's really what's going on. So, I wanted to express that in relation to our verses this morning. We'll end there and see if there's any discussion or questions.
When it is described that the Vedas are stolen, what exactly does it mean?
I don't know exactly what it means. The Vedas are sound, but they're also persons. Vedas personified. So it certainly makes sense that, you know, an unqualified person might get access to something that they really shouldn't have access to. And one would want to protect against that happening because they'll misuse it and abuse it. But there was, that's understandable, that the knowledge of the Vedas was gone. Makes it more in the side of person. Not just corrupting the Vedas, but taking the Vedas. So, and to the degree that the Vedas are then absent. It could also mean then that, you know, the what's left is a corrupted version of the Vedas, and so the real Vedas need the real sense, like yada yada hi dharma shaglani. Dharma shaglani means discrepancy in dharma, discrepancy in religion. So what's left is discrepancy in religion, like, you know, what we find in Kali Yuga, discrepancy in religion. There's churches and mosques and places of worship all over the place, but it's discrepancy of religion, generally. So the genuine thing has to be reestablished. Perhaps something like that. It's not detailed. Something? Yes? Yeah.
I was thinking even spiritual activities like contacting the sun and singing for Lord stars as if in the service, but the mood of sense enjoyment comes and spiritual becomes material. How to maintain that service activity?
The consciousness behind our activity is the answer, and you know this is a how-to question. By following the process properly, by not being inattentive, neglectful, lazy, complacent, sloppy, by, you know, sincerely taking up the process properly. The tendency to do the other is a long-standing tendency. So we bring that tendency with us even into devotional activity. And therefore, spiritual life is not just modifying our activities, because we can bring that contaminated consciousness with us into the forms of pure activity. So that the test is this test of sincerity, of purpose. So we have to remain mindful. The how-to is sincerity. In Rupa Goswami's writing in Nectar Devotion, he raises the question and then answers it, who is eligible for devotional service? And the one who is eager for serving the Lord, for being in that relationship with the Lord, that's the eligibility. So, how to is to maintain that eagerness. And if it's not there, work on it. and associate with those that have it. And apply oneself to the sadhana practices so that will be ignited. These how-to questions, it's like there's some missing information, it's being concealed, and all you just have to do is show that missing information. But it's not just information. We're not being restricted from essential information. The how-to is you act from the heart. Let that which it has been given to you be recognized for what it is. The gift should be recognized. And then when the recognition touches the heart, oh, that's what it is. Otherwise, it looks like, you know, discipline and duty. You know, like a child may be told, sit down and have your meal. I want to play. You know, what's going on is an act of kindness, not something harsh and painful. Sit down and take your bath. Don't steal. Say thank you. You know, it's trying to train the child in something. They just want to be frivolous and do whatever they like. But instead, it's bringing some order to life and ultimately touching their hearts. So when the heart is when there's recognition, I spent about a half an hour this morning preparing for a seminar that I'm going to be participating in Gita Nagari. The theme of the seminar is Vaishnava compassion. Krishna Smarana is going to be taking part in that seminar, and three other presenters. So we're all speaking on that theme. So I was meditating on what part I'm going to play in that presentation. And your question touches on one of the segments that I'm going to be addressing. Compassion is a quality of a Vaishnava. There's 26, that's one of them. The 26 qualities have one that's Swarup Lakshana and the other 25 are Tatastha Lakshana. You know the meaning. Principal characteristic and marginal characteristics that follow the principal characteristic. Krishna Eka Sharana is the principal characteristic. When one surrenders unto Krishna, the Tatastha Lakshanas follow. To have genuine anything, Vaishnava quality, you add to the list. It comes from that one. Say it the other way around. You don't have that one, you're not going to have anything genuine. You can have something that may look like the genuine thing, but it's not genuine. It means it's here this moment and gone the next moment. Or the next moment. It's fleeting and flickering. It's like a shadow and not the real object that the shadow is reflecting. It's just a shadow. Slight movement of the object, the shadow's gone. So we need the genuine thing. We want. And awakening that genuine thing, that's what sadhana is. So much emphasis on sadhanas. It's like striking the match so that the fire comes out. Because the fire is stored. It's right there in the box. You got a box full of fire. But just stored. So the right movement of the head of the match on the striker is our sincere desire to have that relationship with Krishna. That's what needs to become aroused. To the degree that that's aroused, that's the eligibility. Eagerness, intense, sincere eagerness for that. So then the how-to questions is, well, how do you get that? There's this preliminary faith. Rupa Goswami answers it. Preliminary faith. Krishna sees that faith, he sends sadhu. And you associate with sadhu in the right way, without offense to the sadhu, with submission. Inquisitiveness and service. That's how it works. You know, it's not, we don't have the information. We have the information. The how-to, it's already there. So the how-to question is the wrong question. We have the information, how-to. We're just not putting the striker to the match to the striker. How-to. Right there. It's not coming out. It's not a technique. It's the sincerity. Krishna sees the sincerity. We give ourselves to Krishna. Krishna gives himself to us. That's the how-to. Oh, how do I do that? Like infinite regress. And how do I do that? And we just stay in the mental platform. How do I do it? You do it. Like Prabhupada's answer to how do you become sincere? By being sincere. Everybody knows what sincerity is. And everybody knows what insincerity is. Become sincere by being sincere. And when that sincerity is there, oh, that's how you do it. Krishna will help. Krishna will help how to move the head of the match across the striker. May have to take several times. That's okay. Krishna will help. Just keep sincerely trying to get the fire out of the match. Anything else? Yes? Is it possible that somebody
be sincere and at the same time struggling to almost?
Sure. It happens all the time. But which is stronger, light or darkness? You sure? Okay. Where there's hesitation about, well, I'm not so sure, then we stay in the lower modes. But it's sure. To be unsure, that's illusion. It's sure. Check it out. There's a dimmer switch. Ooh, ooh. Every time. Light dispels darkness. Light is stronger than darkness. Sincerity is stronger than the lower modes of nature. Always. If sincerity is weak, So that's the operative principle. That how genuinely, sincerely we want shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That relationship with Krishna in a mood of serving him. So we may need, in that case, we may need more of the first part of the purpose of creation. Getting the taste of suffering in spoiled anticipation to enjoy. The illusion. Oh, I better get sincere. Yeah, get sincere. But that doesn't last, because after that, you know, pain of suffering diminishes, then it's business as usual. Hey, it's not so bad. Kind of. So sincere means it's not dependent upon the circumstance of is it going this way or that way. It's not circumstantial. It's not dependent upon the dualities of material existence. It's inside. The soul really wants the relationship with Krishna. That's required. If we keep our attention focused on that purpose, we've got all the how-tos we need. Something over here? Satish? Microphone?
In the morning in Mangalarti song, when we sing that Tatra Dilaksha, that one, is it refers to Krishna's service in Sankirtan?
Prabhupada described that verse by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He was asked the question you just asked. It was asked, what does he mean by that? And Prabhupada said, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur had a particular vision of spiritual master, and it manifested in that verse. Nikunja yuno, rati keli siddhai. That's how he saw it, spiritual master in that way. Now, you know, your question takes it one step further. Is that the manifest form of the Sankirtan pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? In a very elevated way, yes. That is to say, one who takes part in the Sankirtan pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes oneself eligible for very intimate forms of Radha and Krishna loving service. So that's a nice meditation. But explicitly, it's Radha and Krishna intimate service in the groves of Vraja. To qualify one for that, the Sankirtan, pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasati Thakur describes that the Sankirtan of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at Srivasanga and at Ratiyatra, in terms of bhava, it's not different than the rasa dance of Krishna. And one who takes part in Sankirtan, specifically this Prem Sankirtan, that's what it's a manifestation of that bhava in Chaitanya Leela. That's very elevated. But the verse is very elevated. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.